Hey, welcome to the Happy Rant Podcast. I am Ted Kluck, joined as always in studio by my good friend, my partner in radio, Barnabas Piper. Pipe, we're without Ronald this week. Ronald's on the road. Ronald is doing what Ronald does best, which is leaving abruptly and being mysterious and wanting us to shut the show down completely while he's gone. It's a time, man. It's interesting. Where do you think Ronald is and what do you think he's doing?
I think I saw a clue on the social medias that he may be in North Carolina.
Okay.
But there was no mention of where or really duration with us. He said he was going to miss a couple weeks, but I'm not entirely sure.
Yeah, he was going to miss a couple weeks at Epps for sure.
You made the observation, and I thought it was a very astute one, that we can tell Ronnie's excitement and dedication about the show by whether he's like, take it without me, boys, in which case he might just be gone forever.
Right.
Whereas if he's like, why don't we just hit pause on this thing, release some old, how did he say it, like best of
episodes? He's like, you guys can just run some reruns hits. While I'm gone. You know, he's like, why don't you shut the whole thing
down? Like, yeah, we don't. The whole nature of this show is that we don't have any greatest hits.
Right.
There are no great hits.
Right.
We don't even remember what we talked about 8 minutes
ago.
Like,
baby, we got sponsors to keep happy. We got to keep food on the table here at Happy Rant Corporate. So, yeah, man, we got to just go for it. Now, who do you think he's working out in North Carolina? Like, what's the angle? Ronald never travels, like, without a purpose.
Yeah, I'm wondering if this is a vacation thing. Mm-hmm. You know, so the purpose is Instagrammable rest. If there's a networking thing going on.
Yeah,
here.
I'm guessing networking. Ronald's always got some hooks in the water, but Instagrammable rest will definitely be a thing that happens as well. So we'll have a couple weeks here to kind of keep an eye on it, see what materializes on social. And
I mean, there's already been two pictures, one of a fellow pastor friend doing delicious things on a grill. Mm. And the other was of his wife reading a Eugene Peterson biography, which is like two of his favorite things in a single photo. And I think it may have been on a porch swing.
Of course,
like,
it
was kind of the perfect context.
The pastor's wife at leisure. What could be better? Now, who was the grilling pastor? Was he someone of any fame or renown? Because that could be a clue as to who Ronald's working on the trip.
No, I think it's just a guy who's, you know, deeply, you know, they just connected in their network, but not necessarily like a big author.
Nice.
But he may be one of the guys who's doing those like church in small town kinds of things.
That could be the corner that Ron's trying to stake out. Small town pastor.
Yeah,
publishing.
I think it's the guy he was telling us about who's writing a book about like church in small places.
Ooh.
That kind of thing.
Yeah, I could see that being a point attraction for our boy. We'll definitely keep an eye on it, Pipe. But we've got a lot of content to get into ourselves this week, including a music related thing, which I'm a little bit glad I'm not dropping that bombshell with Ronald here. I don't know how that would go over, but we can get into it, Pipe, after you tell us about Dwell Bible, our business partner.
Yes, our dearly beloved business partner. Dwell is an audio Bible app, listeners, and it's available on all mobile platforms. So if you go to dwellapp.io/happyrant, you can check out their special offers for our listeners, but then just explore what they've got. They have multiple Bible versions. They have listening playlists. They have different features in terms of like a sleep feature and a listen and reflect feature, where it'll play something on repeat with a pause in between, which is great for reflection or memorization, especially. It's something that you and I have both said that we use with some regularity, and my wife listens to it pretty much every morning while she's getting ready for work, which that's kind of the best thing about an audio Bible, is that it fits into the kind of the margins, you know, where you can't sit down and read, but you do want to have scripture in your life. I often use it when I'm either exceptionally weary or exceptionally like just not in a good frame of mind.
Totally.
And I find it really beneficial. So multiple narrators, they have music that you can play in the background, just feature on feature on feature, and they're constantly updating it. So again, go to dwellapp.io/happyrant. The discount is 10% off the annual subscription for our listeners, anybody who purchases through that link, or 33% off the lifetime subscription, which is a really good deal. I mean, to get one third off, it puts it, I think it puts it at under $100 for access to this thing forever. So if you think about a monthly, you know, $5 a month or $6 a month, you know, if you do that for a year and a half, you have paid more than you would for this, you know, lifetime subscription. So really good deal. Again, dwellapp.io/happyrant. Check it out.
Yeah, dude, we love Dwell here in the household. I know that sometimes we have ha-has about our sponsors, but Dwell is one that we both love it. We both use it. I sold a Dwell subscription this week thanks to your help, Pipe. It took a village. It took the whole Happy Rant corporate team. But yeah, our listeners seem interested, and we love that product. Speaking of product, Piper, and speaking of putting out product, I don't know what happened, but I kind of messed around and released a pop song this week. You listened to it in the carpool line. Did you play it for your girls?
No, I didn't. I was listening to it while waiting for them to get out of the school bus.
There you go.
So that way I could give focused attention to it. Because my understanding is you get writer credit on this for the lyrical portion in large
part. Yeah, I get writer credit and I get a little bit of vocal credit. So let me tell you the story of how this came about, because I think my love language is like joke projects that turn real. And I had a kid in my class. For example, the Happy Rant book.
This whole podcast.
Absolutely. You kind of do it on a whim. You're having some ha-has, and then one day you realize it's a real thing that's out there. But I have this exceptional student. His name's Davis Smith. He's a Happy Rant listener. So Dave, if you're out there, we love you, man. We love you from the show. Dave's a huge fan of the Happy Rant, and he was a transfer student to Union. He came to us from Belmont, and like on day one, he was just one of those guys that like you can tell has the sparkle. You know, he had kind of big, wild hair, great ideas, great in the room guy. Was just a joy to have in class, and I found out that he is quite a musician. Like he's got a Spotify, Davis Smith Music.
He came from Belmont. So
exactly.
I mean, that's kind of what they do there.
Came to us, wanted to go to a Christian college, you know, but,
shots fired.
Shout out Union. Anyway, we were talking one day, and I was complimenting his music. And, I was like, Dave, because we're both kind of on this self-loathing hipster spectrum where we can't do the fully commercial thing. I was like, what if we get together for like 2 hours and we write the most ubiquitous, like center cut, cliche pop song imaginable, and then record it, thinking it would never happen. Lo and behold, one night I wrote the lyrics, shot them to Dave. The next morning he's like, hey, I've got music, like I've got a melody for it. And before we knew it, we were like in my office with recording equipment, tracking the vocals. And the funny thing is we put this thing out, we dropped it in my classes yesterday. So we played it in my classes, and we put up flyers just in my building because we had a girl in our class too who like never said a word the whole semester, but she was always drawing and she was doodling like these beautiful pictures. And one day I was just like, hey, Shelby, why don't you draw something for the band? And then like 12 minutes later, she created a poster with like a QR code that would like take you to the website for the song. And it just became a whole thing. So the name of the band is Chevu. It's the French word for hair. Because Dave has big hair, I've got a lot of hair. We were gonna call the band L'Oreal after our favorite line of hair products, but then we realized like we didn't want to spend our whole careers in court with a huge multinational corporation.
Yeah, getting sued isn't great.
Getting sued by a shampoo provider, not where we see ourselves in 5 years. But so we called the band Chevu. It's Chevu, and the name of the track is "Caution to the Winds." And I got to tell you, dude, it was a blast to write this. I didn't know what I was doing at all. So I had to Google like how to write a pop song and like, you know, verse, chorus, bridge, the whole thing. But put it together, put it out, and it's kind of sweeping the campus such that like I've got these like bro-y dudes who I've never met coming up like quoting lyrics to me. They're like, Cluck, bro. They're like, when you said you felt like a gunslinger and felt like a king in the bridge, man, they're like, that hit hard, bro. You know, so it's kind of become a thing, man. And it's been fun. Like KK and the moms group, they're like Marco Poloing each other about it. It's turned into a bit of a deal. So maybe you can drop it in the show notes with this app and we can get a little national global traction for caution.
Yeah,
to the
wind, we'll give it some we'll give it some social media love
for sure
via our Happy Rant channels as well. The thing that I noticed about it was, you know, so living in a city of songwriters, I've become just a little bit more attuned to like lyrics that matter and lyrics that don't. Yeah. And I would venture to say for a pop song, this is on the high end of lyrics that say actual things.
Really? Dude, tell me more. I think I agree.
It's not like...
It's not Bob Dylan.
You know, the greatest George Jones heartbreaker of all time kind of thing. But there's like... You give like snapshots and I can totally see. So here's the thing. It has the perfect like high school or college student listening to it and going, that's totally my experience.
Yes.
I know exactly what he's talking about. It has that. So like these little snapshots of lyrics. And I was like, it's really well done for what it is. Well,
I appreciate it, man. Yeah. I kind of wrote it about me and KK's story a little bit. And just to make it fit the kind of pop paradigm, we kind of had to pare a lot out, but yeah, that was basically snippets, snapshots of our story, and wanted to make it a little narrative.
Pop music isn't known for telling a story at all. It's known for just being like strings of lyrics with an earwig tune.
Yeah, inane, repeatable. This definitely has the earwig tune. And let me read you some blurbs, Pipe. I had one student say that.
I love that you have blurbs.
We got blurbs, dude.
This is amazing.
Yeah, we're going full. This is a full, you know, album release moment. So I had one student say that she felt like it was something that could be playing at Macy's in like 2012 when she was shopping. I took that as a high compliment. I had a dude tell me that he could imagine like crying in the shower to this, which I took as
that's super high praise.
Absolutely. So, yeah, the buzz is just unbelievable, dude, and it's really been a whirlwind over the last 48 hours. It's kind of changing our lives.
Can you tease some of the lyrics for our listeners? You know, obviously it hits different when there's the melody and the beat and everything, but you know, just the lyrics themselves. Maybe give us a stanza if you will.
No, I will, and totally. And listeners, we'll put this on social so you can listen. But the payphone at my best friend's wedding line. That was in reference to a story where KK and I had been dating for like 3 weeks and it was like fast, furious romance. I knew I was going to marry her, but she had already agreed to like be in her best friend's wedding like a year previous. So she had to like leave the state, go to this wedding. And she called me one night at like midnight and she was like, hey, there's this dude here. He's one of the groomsmen. He's like super coming on to me, you know, and I played it cool on the phone. I was like, baby, it's okay. You just have a great time. I trust you. Just remember what we have. And then I hung up the phone. I was with my buddy Russell and I was like, get in the truck. We're driving to Arkansas. And we were going to
get your baseball.
Exactly.
Bat.
We were watching Goodfellas at the time, believe it or not. It was just a perfect storm of like youth, testosterone, the most violent movie imaginable. And it was intoxicating. So my dad literally like stood in the doorway of my house and like wouldn't let me leave to go like drive to Arkansas and fight this guy.
Don't go commit a felony, son. It's not going to go well.
Yeah. Shout out Pops for that wisdom. But he also knew my truck wouldn't make it out of Indiana probably. So that would have been a whole other set of circumstances. So that's payphone at my best friend's wedding. The bridge, I enjoyed the bridge because it was something like, you know, I'm the football star, you're the theater girl, they say we'll never make it, something that kind of energy on that. And then there's a line, when you kiss me on that midnight empty street, I walked home feeling like a gunslinger, feeling like a king. And that was where like KK and I had our first kiss, and it was again at the end of a date, like in college. It was like 2 a.m. and I remember that night I walked home to my dorm like down the middle of the street because it was 2 a.m. and I just felt like the king of the world. So that was a little peek behind the songwriting curtain into the process there, Pipe.
Also, Upland, Indiana hasn't actually installed sidewalks anywhere. So
also in Upland, Indiana, I could probably walk down the middle of the street at like 2 p.m. and be fine. So
that's right. Just dodge the occasional like truck hauling pigs or something.
Exactly. There was a little creative license there. So yeah, man, that was the deal. That's Chez Vu, caution to the wind. It's been a bit of a phenomenon. It was the perfect like end of semester joke project to offset all the grating and all the monotony. And, you know, on the poster, so the poster is my face, Dave's face, and like a hand making the ASL symbol for hair, which I thought was like a nice touch. So that's become a bit of a phenomenon, people walking down the...
That's a really nice head nod to those who won't be able to listen to the song.
Well, dude, that's it. That's it. We just wanted to...
Just a real nice, like, hey, this is for you too. At least the name.
We wanted to be inclusive, and that's the kind of band we are moving forward, you know, and we'll hope that the decadence and the excess of the road doesn't tear us apart, you know, as people. And
can I ask one of those like Rolling Stone journalist
dude,
questions?
Totally. You're going all Lester Bangs on it right now. I love it.
Yeah. So, you know, what's next for you after this great success? Like, where do you go from here?
Well, that's a great question. I really appreciate it. And we have given it some thought as a band, and, I'm going to share something.
Are you just trying to like live in the moment, or do you have grand
plans?
Well,
dude, we're trying to live in the moment for sure. And we want to be a one hit wonder, and that we want this to be a huge hit. And we want to sell out. We want to see it in commercials. So maybe Dwell can use it in a commercial. I don't know. The possibilities are endless, but we've talked about another collab. So when you listen to the track, I'm sure you noticed that like Dave Davis just sings like an angel. He's got like an unbelievable pop singing voice. And I have a gravelly old man, like cigars and other things voice. And we want to do a country track, man. We want to do something that'll like take advantage of the low end and a little bit of the rasp and the growl in my voice. So
yeah, you need to channel like your Kris Kristofferson.
That's it, dude. Yeah.
Late career Kris Kristofferson. And
that's what I'm after, dude. I want to write a real hard hitter, man. A real hard-hitting country track, and maybe Dave and I will get back into the studio and make some more magic, man. I mean, it's all about the music and the work. We just love the work. So,
are you thinking heartbreak song? Are you thinking what direction are we going? I mean, country has a few things that it does really well, like heartbreak, like the summer sort of like feel good, you know, drinking song.
Yeah, I'm thinking more of that. You know,
there's some options.
I'm thinking like small town nostalgia. You know what I mean? Small town,
okay.
Like Indiana, cornfield, public school, kind of nostalgic vibes. You know, I know you're not a bro country guy, so we're gonna try really hard stay out of that lane. But yeah, I'm thinking channel a little bit of that small town and see.
But I mean, the small town nostalgia thing has been done really well by non bro country.
It has.
Like Alan Jackson's probably biggest hit ever was Chattahoochee, which is got a couple of the best like small town Saturday night lines of any country.
Totally,
song.
Dude. So yeah, we're going small town, bowling alley, you know, that kind of energy with it.
And I think one of my favorite lines from a country song is from that one where he's talking about, you know, sitting in the backseat of his car and he says, "I was willing, but she wasn't ready. So I settled for a burger and a grape snow cone."
Dude, that's phenomenal.
if that doesn't sum up being 17.
That's outstanding. Being 17 in a small town, you know, that's pretty much the extent of it right there. That's so good, dude. Now, Pipe, what do you think? Because, you know, Ronald gets real like skittish and squeamish whenever we talk about music or the music business. Like, given that this is a joke project, I wonder what his response to it would have been.
I think Ronnie is really reluctant to give anybody feedback on their art.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Even though you're like, no, this is not art. Right. This is a joke project.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I don't know that I've ever heard him. I don't know that I've ever heard him give an explicit opinion on music.
I don't think I've ever heard him give another musician credit. Either, like, unless it was like, the Smiths.
It's not that he's only positive. It's that he's a void.
Yeah,
he's a void of comments.
He is, man. He is. He keeps it mysterious when it comes to that stuff. So, maybe if Dave and I get back into the studio and we go like full mopey, kind of British guyliner, you know, kind of a Joy Division vibe with it. Maybe that would get onto Ronald's radar a little bit.
Yeah, like a little. It has to be if you modeled it after the music that influenced him.
Exactly.
Not So not the music that he makes, but the music, music influences that, like, him.
Yeah, for
him.
Sure.
I could see him giving it, you know, you could get like a half smile and a nod and like, yeah, that's all right.
Yeah, 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 exactly. That's the last kind of music that I think Dave and I would want to make, though. But you never know. If we stay in the business for decades, I mean, I'm sure we'll get there eventually. But yeah, fun times, Pipe. Thanks for listening. Maybe play it for your girls. You know, I've been told there's a bit of a Carly Rae Jepsen kind of energy to it. So,
there definitely is. Like, I listened to about 3 bars of it and I was like, oh yeah, I know exactly what this is.
Exactly.
Just stylistically.
Exactly. Yeah. We kept it simple for sure. Piper, speaking of keeping it simple and maybe too simple, you texted about a phenomenon that's happening right now, which is pastors plagiarizing sermons from each other. And you're going to have to bring me up to speed on like cases of this, recent cases of it,
yeah.
Why anybody would want to do it, et cetera.
So funny enough, the same journalist who came up in an earlier episode when we were talking about the kind of the balance between religion journalism and gossip, and it raised a bit of
which
a ruckus.
Is the thing we're that we're definitely that not us. Talking about at all on this episode.
Yeah, we're not talking about that right now. Same journalist broke a story and kind of delved into the realm of pastors plagiarizing other pastors' sermons. Mm-hmm. And one of the most notable instances was a guy who I think is from Michigan, who just stole an entire Mark Driscoll sermon line for line, at least big chunks of it. And not just like quoting him, but like just using his sermon.
Amazing.
And the thing is, like, this all hit the news and I was like, oh, pastors have been doing this forever.
Really?
Ever since sermons started going on the internet,
yeah.
Pastors at churches have been taking more notable pastors' sermons and passing them off at their own. Or just illustrations from, like, sure. I remember when I was in college, I think I've told the story on the podcast before. So when I was a freshman in high school, my dad started preaching through Romans. Mm-hmm. When I left for college, he was at about Romans 6 or 7. So I go off to college.
He's nothing if not thorough.
He's a little Martin Lloyd Jonesian. Uh-huh. I get to Wheaton, start looking for churches in the area, attend one church. Happens to be preaching through Romans, a little bit behind my dad. Mm-hmm. So he's preaching through Romans 6. He gets to a certain text and uses a really familiar sermon illustration. Mm. I'm sitting there going, this is very deja vu. Why do I know this? And then I realized, like, 8 weeks prior, I had heard my dad preach the exact same illustration. And this guy just took it. And he didn't say, you know, it wasn't like, oh, John Piper said he explains it this way.
Huh.
He was just like, worked it into his thing. So that's a thing that's been happening. So I don't know what. I think it's probably just the kind of thing that will be a story every few years until, you know, we just shame pastors into writing their own sermons. But yeah, that's the phenomenon. And the irony of it is that he stole a Mark Driscoll sermon because. You know, that's not a name that has a lot of shine on it these days.
That's true. I wonder if it was like an early, like, Screamo Driscoll sermon, or if it was one of the some of his more recent work.
I'm not sure because they did a follow-up report that said the moment, like, we called them for comments about that message, then it disappeared off their website. Like, they pulled the whole thing.
Man.
So they're running and hiding.
Yeah, dude. It's got to be one of those things, and I've never pastored, so I can't fully understand it, but, like, I guess if you're really busy and you've got to preach a sermon on Sunday and you don't love the sermon writing process, I mean, yeah, the past 20 years have made it such that you can just go grab a sermon and just run with it. And even like a couple of years ago when we were promoing that sermon, Spurgeon Study Bible, they would run like entire pages with like notes from his sermons. And I'm like, if somebody had this Bible, they could just straight up give like a Spurgeon sermon.
The thing is, like, Spurgeon didn't manuscript though. Yeah. So it's a one-page outline that he went 45 minutes on or whatever.
Right.
And, you know, you have to be a little bit more prepared or gifted to do that.
Yeah, for sure. For sure.
The thing that, so to be a little bit less ha-ha about it, the thing that gets me is... preaching is not a merely a communication of information.
That's right.
You know, because if that's all it was, we wouldn't need pastors.
Right.
You know, we could just, you could rotate through reading homilies, or you could play, you know, you could play any old podcast.
Sure.
Six preachers could cover the entirety of Christendom or something
right.
like that.
That's right. Yeah.
There's a personal aspect because the pastor is the shepherd. There's a, what is the Holy Spirit giving this pastor from this text? Like, mm-hmm. obviously they're doing the exegesis, but in terms of emphasis,
yeah.
in terms of passion, in terms of even just the unique communication styles, you know, some pastors are a little bit more down home. Some are a little bit more esoteric. Some are, you know, fire breathing dragons, and others are very calm.
Yeah.
All of them have, you know, and you can be gifted in all of those ways. You lose all of that when you plagiarize.
Totally.
Like that guy just replaced the Holy Spirit with Mark Driscoll.
Exactly. Exactly.
What is Mark giving me? What I'm going to channel my inner Mark. Like that sounds
right.
You know, replace Mark Driscoll with John Piper and it's just as bad. It's not, that's not a shot at any particular man.
Yeah.
It's just a, it feels like gross negligence on the role of what a pastor should be doing.
Yeah, I totally agree. And I wonder where it comes from in the sense of like at the level of the heart. I wonder if there's a sense of, well, this worked well for this guy, so why wouldn't I try it? I wonder if we've become so blinded by the fame, platform, influence, that whole aspect of things, and people are so, you know, stretched thin, chasing all these different things, that maybe there's not the respect given to, like, the process of just sitting silently with a text and some commentaries and, like, waiting to see what the Spirit does to you as you prepare to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah. And I think there's, so I think that's part of it. I think there's a comparison aspect, mm-hmm. you know, certain preachers get fame and fortune by preaching,
yeah.
which is weird. That's a weird thing.
It's very weird,
but it exists.
Yeah.
And so there's a constant comparison. Like the first time I preached at Emmanuel, I had to fight the mentality of, I'm walking into the pulpit that Ray Ortlund filled for 12 years.
Yeah.
I will never in my life preach a sermon as good as what Ray preaches mm-hmm. because of the gifts that God has given him and the dedication and ministry that he puts into it. And the fact that I'm not a weekly preacher, I'm a fill-in guy.
Yeah.
So just the, and just a constant, like it is so much work
yeah.
to just focus on what is God giving me to do from this text for these people for these 35 minutes or whatever.
Yeah.
Instead of going, how does it compare to this? How would this person do it? I'm going to, you know, and kind of, you can just get spun up in that.
Totally.
And then I think the other aspect of it is kind of the imposter syndrome sense, where I think there's a lot of pastors who are just, they feel like fakes.
Yeah.
You know, they feel inadequate mm-hmm. in the role. Mm-hmm. And so they, plagiarizing is a way of like, well, that worked.
Yeah.
So I'm going to grab what works
yeah.
instead of really believing that God put me here on purpose.
Yeah. And there's a real grabbing what works kind of mindset that's operative all over like the leadership industry and the church leadership, church growth kind of industry where you're,
yeah.
you're laying these templates of what worked for somebody else over the, you know, the makeup of your church and hoping that it also works. But dude, I can tell you from the aspect of a layperson, so from my perspective of just being in the pew every Sunday morning, the church we go to is tremendous. I love it. And we got four or five pastors, but we've got one guy who does, I would say, the lion's share of the teaching, and he's phenomenal. Like, he's just really, really gifted, really good, really humble, really vulnerable. And I always love, like, hearing from him. And when we first started going there, I would be more excited when he was preaching, but I can honestly say, as I've gotten to know the other guys and gotten to know their hearts, gotten to know their gifts, they're all very different from one another, but I love hearing from each and every one of them. And they each like bring something a little bit different to the pulpit, but it's all grounded in the fact that I know they love the word and I know they work hard
yeah.
and I know what they do for the church outside the study. You know, I know just how hard they work and how much they love it. And as a result, like there isn't that sense of, you know, oh yeah, but they're not as good as this guy or this famous guy or this podcaster or whatever. I think when you really love your church and you really love your pastors, you do love hearing from them. And hopefully that's a note of encouragement.
And I think you said two phrases in that I think make make all the difference mm-hmm. in what you're saying. The first is you said you described one of the preachers as vulnerable. Mm-hmm. That idea that like he's giving his heart totally. To the sermon. So you're hearing kind of from his guts. Mm-hmm. Like this is what he's putting into it. They're sort of putting himself on the line. Mm-hmm. And the second is hearing from your pastor.
Yeah.
Even if you write a sermon, it doesn't mean your people are hearing from you.
Right.
And, you know, they're hearing your mouth, but like they can just be hearing information that anybody could have shared.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it's commentary, it's observation, it's whatever. Preaching is something else, which is, you know, that's the hardest aspect of preaching for me.
Yeah.
Is getting from information to self. But yeah, once I feel the same way. You know, we have TJ Timms is our lead pastor and he does the vast majority of our preaching, and I love it when he preaches, but Sam Albury preaches sometimes and John Farmer preaches sometimes and Ray comes back and preaches sometimes. And I'm never disappointed when any of them step up and preach
exactly.
because they're so dramatically different.
Yeah.
But you're hearing from this man who was called to give this message and they give themselves to it.
Yeah.
And you cannot do that if you plagiarize.
Dude, totally. And undergirding that though, all of it is a real like deep baseline respect for the calling, the office. It's more than a job. It's more than just like a rhetorical exercise that you're trying to get right. And quite frankly, it's more than just being a gifted communicator and using your gifts. Because and maybe it's a function. I think you and I swim in some similar waters where we're around gifted communicators on a semi-regular basis. Like that really does get boring. Like I don't need to hear another slick speaker. I've heard enough slick speakers in my life. Like it's not impressive anymore. I really want to hear from somebody's heart. And I think the other baseline aspect of that is knowing your pastors, caring about your pastors, knowing where their hearts are. And yeah. That's a big part of like wanting to hear like what the Lord is doing to them through a text, you know?
Yeah. I think one of the most encouraging things to me, and it happened in a recent Sunday at our church, is, you know, we get there early to kind of go through a walkthrough of the service. And the preacher that Sunday, he's like, hey, I can only be in here for a minute because I'm still working on my sermon. And my first thought was, wait, you waited this long? And then I realized he wrote an entire sermon. Mm-hmm. And then on Saturday night, just had the realization that there's something else in this text that needs to be brought out. And so he was redoing his sermon.
Yeah.
And I'm like, this is what preaching is supposed to come from.
Yeah, that's right.
Somebody who's so giving themselves to it that when the Spirit is like, actually, the people need to hear this aspect of the text, or this is the real point of it. You just redo it. You're not just kind of going with the spit shined and polished outline that you settled on Thursday.
Dude, do you feel like as you've gotten older, you've gotten better at that? Because for me, and I haven't probably preached as much as you guys, but like just speaking for the last decade and a half since we've been doing the book thing, like there were years when I was younger and slicker and probably funnier, but like harder of heart, where I would just write the talk and give it. But now like the experience is a bit more like what you're describing, where right up until it's time to go on, you're kind of chewing on it, you know, and being changed a little bit by it. And that's such a better way to do it.
Yeah.
And I think it's a nice argument for getting older. There's very little about getting older that I'm excited about, but one of the things that I am excited about is that, and maybe seeing that get better, you know?
Well, and it also comes, so there's a twofold aspect. One, I hope, is growing in humility. The other is just confidence that if this is going to work, it's not my doing anyway.
Right.
Like when I'm at my slickest and best and most compelling, mm-hmm. it can land like a lead balloon.
Totally.
You know?
Totally.
Because God might not be in that.
Yeah, dude.
And so
I've had that experience where I felt like really confident going into a talk, and then I'll finish it and just be like, yeah, you know, that went well on paper, but it didn't probably do anything.
Yeah. When I do that, it feels a little bit like, you know, getting on a hot shooting streak in an empty gym.
Yeah.
you know, feels really good, and it mattered to nobody.
Exactly.
Yeah, and so hopefully humility and confidence, but then also, yeah, just the recognition that there's nothing to lose.
Yeah.
If you stand up there and you stumble through a couple parts because you didn't have it perfectly memorized,
right,
it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
And if you're kind of putting yourself on the line, so you are more vulnerable, you make yourself sound a little bit less kind of pulled together and the hero of the story. Mm-hmm. So?
Yeah.
That's what people need to hear. People are compelled by that, not this kind of the perfect, like, setup spike kind of, kind of communication.
Totally. And it's so funny that, like, there are whole industries devoted to, like, getting people perfect at that. And, you know, but oftentimes, so often, the best preachers, the people that we connect with the most as a, you know, as people in the pew are not the folks that are the slickest. I think there's a good lesson in there somewhere, you know, all the time and the resources that we're spending on image and public speaking and leadership and all that stuff would probably be better spent, like, just read the passage a few more times, you know, sit in the quiet with it a few more minutes, and maybe something good comes out of that.
Yeah, I'm absolutely with you on that. And that's not to say that preparation isn't necessary. It's not saying that, like, slickness is preparation, and this means come in and just sort of like, what's the Spirit going to give me on the spot?
Right.
But kind of be preparing both heart and manuscript up to the moment you step up there.
Yeah.
Like I pretty much sit, if I'm preaching on a Sunday or speaking somewhere, I have a pen in hand with my manuscript. Mm-hmm. Up till, you know, the moment I'm being introduced.
Yeah, I do that basically. Too. And usually when I go up there, it's all scribbled upon as I think of, you know, things in the moment that I want to add to it. But yeah, it's fun, man. It's challenging and it's scary. And some of the talks I think that in retrospect have gone the best have been some of the ones that I've been the most scared of, or the most nervous about. And you know, that's a good thing for me. It's good for me to feel a little scared. And yeah, whenever I preach in a church, I get really nervous just because it's a weighty thing, you know?
Oh yeah. It's preaching at a church is always the most nerve wracking for me.
Yeah. Yeah.
Any, you know, conferences, retreats, those kinds of things are, they're substantial. They matter. Mm-hmm. But preaching on a Sunday morning has always been a thing that, like, it's the thing that makes me feel the absolute most kind of inconsequential. Mm. And I mean, as compared to the task.
Yeah.
And just kind of like, oh, I'm tiny and this is a big thing.
Yeah, absolutely, man. Well, Pipe, that's a good note to end on. We were going to have some ha-has about another thing. I'm looking at the show notes. It was the fact that Drisky is like the face of the National Day of Prayer. Per pray.com.
Or at least pray.com's National Day of Prayer.
Yeah. Interesting. I didn't know that pray.com was a thing, but
this was an ad that popped up on my Instagram, and then I went to his so I think Mark Driscoll sponsored it.
Okay.
Sponsored his own post to push that he is the face of this thing. And
fascinating.
That was
the whole thing is really compelling.
Was enough to make me kind of chuckle.
Totally, dude. Drisky's looking he's in the black. Yeah, that black button down, looking very Arizona, very Scottsdale.
I think we need to go, you know, 30 seconds on his look these days. I went through, you know, I kind of went down the Driscoll rabbit hole a little bit just to kind of see where he's at, both what's he saying and then how's he looking.
Yeah.
Very tan.
Yeah, very tan.
But he's not painting the hairline anymore, I don't think.
That's good, dude. That's a good pivot away from painting the hairline.
Yeah, so which is, and honestly, it works for him because it fits the rugged a little bit more. Mm-hmm. You know, he's got a touch more grizzled.
Yeah.
But he, his like jacket and then these kind of heavy duty button down that are equal parts like flannel and jacket.
Yeah.
He's very consistent.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a good look on him.
Dude, it is a good look. And yeah, I mean, I've noticed the same things, Pipe, and not to get too deep into the middle-aged man fashion weeds here, but I think as our bodies,
because we would never do such
we would never do something so shallow after having such a legitimately good talk about preaching. But I think as our bodies change and we get a little older, like I don't know about you, but I'm looking for some structure. You know what I mean? I'm looking for a garment that it covers some things up. And I think maybe that's the space that Driskey's in, but I'm with you, man, 100%. Like he's really pulling off the sort of rugged tan, like Scottsdale guy thing without verging into like, you know, Louis Giglio growth hormone. I look like I'm 33 from the neck down and like 83 from the neck up.
Yeah. And it's not the military jacket or anything. It's it's like, you know, a subtle denim, subtle leather, subtle flannel, kind of single monotone, light, you know, muted colors, like really, really well done. Whoever his stylist is, I don't know if it's his wife or like he has somebody on staff or, you know, whatever it is. There's a strong direction happening there that really, I don't know. I was very impressed because, you know, in the past with his affliction t-shirts and big, huge leather straps on his arms and stuff, there was a lot going on that has now, that's just been,
he's grown up.
It's been left in his youth.
Driskey's grown up a little bit, Pipe. And, I'm excited for him. He's the face of prey.com. So, shout out Driskey for
at least a day.
Always doing a great job for at least a day. We need to find his apparel provider and get a little partnership going. Maybe we can find ourselves into some like heavily structured black button downs that would be slimming for us as well.
Yeah, I mean, I was a little disappointed to see he wasn't wearing an Erwin McManus anorak, but you know, it doesn't fit the look.
That's still the funniest thing ever, man. Like how a pastor could be like, you know what I really need in my ministry? A $2,500 jacket with my name on it. Like that's the thing, you know? that's so crazy.
I think, so the jackets were obscenely expensive. Okay, that's whatever. The fact that there was a $140 t-shirt, that is just a blank t-shirt.
It was a white
and
t-shirt.
And it's called it's the Erwin T.
The Erwin T. Unbelievable, dude.
And that's the difference between an $18 t-shirt and a $128 t-shirt.
Well, dude, and even the fact that like, so I always equate everything. I always bounce things off the world of sports and like fame in the world of sports. And you take a sports figure like Michael Jordan, universally recognized around the globe, international superstar, you know, perhaps the greatest athlete to ever live, whatever, that could be debated. But he has the Jordan-like Jumpman clothing line. And their low-end t-shirt is, you could probably get it for $25. With Jordan's logo on it, the greatest athlete of all time. And yet Erwin Raphael McManus thinks, you know what I need is a basic white t-shirt with some words in a very basic font, and it'll be $183. You know, it's just astonishing to me.
I mean, I'm sure there's a scalability thing. You know, Jordan's selling more shoes and more apparel than any other branded name. But even so, if Jordan wanted to release a $2,500 anything, he could, and it would sell.
Did you ever see the Three Amigos, dude? That Steve Martin comedy from the 80s?
Yes.
I wonder if Erwin Raphael McManus has like a room full of like people at his church on sewing machines, just like putting all that gear together. And that's why it's so expensive. Because he has to pay him like LA like living wages, you know? I don't know.
Or maybe it's like one person at his church who's hand-stitching all that stuff.
That could be, dude. The ultimate.
I would love to get a look at the sales numbers.
I would too. So maybe McManus Co. They could share their like year end annual report with us as a program, and we can delve into the numbers a bit. But
yeah, we're pounding the table for transparency.
Exactly, Pipe. Speaking of numbers, we've got a Patreon app to do because we got to keep our financials where they need to be. So I'm going to say that we've done what we always do in this program, which is wander to and fro throughout some topics. And until next time.
The Happy Rant is brought to you by Resonate Recordings. If you go to resonaterecordings.com, you can see the full range of services they offer. So if you're considering starting a podcast, they are the ones we recommend going with. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see their prices, to connect with them and ask any questions, and to see what they can do to help you launch, edit, master, and improve your podcast. Again, go to resonaterecordings.com to see what they can do to help you launch and improve your podcast.
Hey, you're tired of parenting advice and news headlines that are more confusing than assembling IKEA furniture, we've got just the podcast for you. My dear friend Abby and I are here to help you navigate the parenting roller coaster.
Should your kids be on social media? What should you tell a friend facing an unplanned pregnancy? These are just some of the many questions we tackle on our podcast.
Subscribe to The Real Deal of Parenting wherever you find your podcast.